Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
This week, we're speaking with Sam McGrath about the fitness philosophy behind the world's elite military.
Now, the basis of any military program of fitness is based on something that's cheap and scalable. And there is nothing better than running and a bit of circuit training to get people up the curve quickly.
So, Jane, happy new year. Welcome to 2020.
Happy 2020.
Did you go running over Christmas?
I did. I was lucky enough to do hills in Essex and then hills in... I keep saying Preston, but everyone tells me to say Clitheroe. Clitheroe, the countryside.
Lancashire.
Lancashire.
How do the hills compare Essex, Lancashire?
I mean, Lancashire's a lot more beautiful. You know,
true.
Not that I can throw any shade on where I'm from, but I mean, Epping Forest is beautiful, but, you know, there's some horrible hills around Loughton and Buckhurst Hill, for
there
anyone
are.
Who knows them. And I really believe I would not have run... 3 marathons if I had to train in either place. I do not like hills.
So if hills had been more...
involved in my plan, I just cannot bear them. I just can't.
So was there any hill training at all when you...
No.
Wow.
No.
They are very good though.
They are good, yeah. As, you know, I've done some runs with my brother and he was on and on about the hills and how good they were.
You set a new 10K...
Set a 10K PB yesterday, so maybe the hills... are alive.
With something.
With something that made me better at running.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, oh,
yeah.
Good. Well, we should speak to our guest.
We should. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Major Sam McGrath was one of the youngest soldiers since World War II to achieve the rank of Major, with tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and ran the selection course for the legendary Parachute Regiment for 3 years. Since leaving the army, he has run a number of high-profile ultramarathons. In his new book, Be Para Fit, he shares the core values that he learned as a para, ones which he believes are applicable to civilian runners as they are to elite soldiers. Sam, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Delighted to be here, Ben. Thanks for the invite.
Before we get into the book, why running?
Why running? I mean, look, I've been doing it for so long now. It's almost part of my identity.
Right.
But I mean, the backstory is 25 years ago, a careers advisor in my school asked me what I wanted to do. I started with stuntman. We ended up with paratrooper. I went to the careers advisor. He told me I needed to run 5 days a week. I took him literally, and I turned up on day one and I smashed the race. I won everybody. I beat everybody by about a minute.
Wow.
And it just it quickly became something which just formed part of my identity and it became a need. And I've been doing it ever since and I love it.
So how did it fit in with your career then? Was it sort of something that went, because obviously to be a paratrooper, you've got to be incredibly fit. So was it something that you would do in your spare time, or was it built into the sort of the lifestyle?
Well, I guess, you know, it's multi-phase, but in order to join the parachute regiment, you need to get to a decent standard to be kind of considered.
Yeah.
And so I started running every day. I did that for a couple of years. And then, you know, day one, you know, in the army, and I win this race.
Yeah.
And this was so far from anything I'd done outside of, you know, I wasn't a runner at school.
Yeah.
But I was then seen as this really fit dude. And what was kind of interesting to me was that it was something that I started doing because I had to do it.
Right.
But then when I started to enjoy the success of being seen as fit and being someone that was demonstrably fitter than anybody else, I started to associate the feeling of pushing myself in training to that euphoric feeling that I got from being associated with being a fit guy and being a paratrooper. And so it became an intrinsic motivation rather than an extrinsic one.
So your book, which is Be Parafit, is a sort of taking what you've learned from your military career and the fitness and applying it to life, running. What's the sort of the broad spectrum of it?
So the essence is this. I spent 11 years in the parachute regiment. The final 2 years I commanded the selection course. So I took civilians who'd not been part of the military, and I took them from a kind of standing start to being really, really fit. Now, the basis of any military program of fitness is based on something that's cheap and scalable. And there is nothing better than running and a bit of circuit training to get people up the curve quickly. And so what I've done in this book is I've taken all of that core experience that I gathered in 11 years in the parachute regiment, and then I've combined it with the 10 years that I've had since leaving the parachute regiment. And now I'm an MD in a big bank. I've got 4 kids, but I'm still competing at the kind of, you know, top of my peer group in ultramarathons. And so I've tried to blend that core, you know, fitness thing with really the complexity for me is, how do you find time for it? How do you maximise that time that you've got available? And how do you kind of build a life that supports the training ambitions that you have?
And what's the time frame? It's 4 weeks.
So look, 4 weeks, and I'm not trying to miss sell, but there is anyone who tells you can transform your fitness and you can go from kind of sofa to 100Ks in 4 weeks is full of it. what I'm saying here is that you need to build a pattern, and it takes 4 weeks to embed something into being a habit. And once you embed something into a habit and it's something that becomes enduring and sustained throughout your life, that's the route to elite fitness. So in 4 weeks, what I'm aspiring to do is to embed fitness into someone's daily rituals such that they're still doing it in 40 years, not just in 4 weeks' time.
So this is running and sort of things that people can do at home? This is sort of that sort of working out?
Yeah, so this can be done anywhere on any budget. Even in my job, I often find myself in places where there's no gym, and I've got to kind of maximise, you know, no resources to train. And so what I've learned is that running is the basis for everything. And I complement that with strength sessions. But in practice, running is the kind of thing that, you know, that I love. Yeah. I do strength sessions really because I know I should do.
Got it. I think that's like everyone, really.
Every runner ever. Yeah. In your experience, how has, like in the book, you talk about having a mantra, and how has that kind of mantra of background of a paratrooper kind of helped you during the endurance races, which you've kind of come on to?
So Jane, let me answer that sort of slightly differently. Fitness is really a medium for us to build the mindset in our people. And so, paratroopers are fit, but actually the process of selecting someone is such that you push them beyond their appetite for challenge. And in the process of doing that, you get them to understand that they're capable of more than they think they are. I think that is that mindset is something which gives paratroopers the edge in battle, but it's also a mindset which I think is just as relevant for someone in the workplace. It's just as relevant as someone that's got a load of kids or, you know, sort of difficult things in their life. And so, you know, having the confidence that you can do more than they think that you think you can do. Now, we use running as a means to do that because, you know, it's cheap, it's easy. And I found that, not only does it kind of build this kind of growth mindset and this grit that's really, really useful, but it also gives me the mental space to kind of be a more present father. Because look, let's face it, after you've done a really hard interval session, it doesn't matter what you've done in the office. It doesn't matter. You've just forgotten all about it. And so it's kind of this sort of cleansing thing. And so for me, it's the two things. One is running gives people a really potent mindset to kind of tackle their limiting beliefs and bulldoze them. And the second thing is it gives people mental space to kind of be more present, which I think we all need to do more of.
Do you think that mindset can be trained, or do you think you have it or you don't?
So, I mean, that's kind of going to the core of my philosophy, but absolutely I do. I think, you know, I believe that, you know, everyone is capable of more than they currently are. And what I love about running is that what better way to instill a growth mindset in someone than prove to them that, look, if you do this for 4 weeks, whatever you do on day one is going to be significantly less than what you're capable of in 4 weeks' time. And so, you know, you then translate that and you say, well, okay, so, you know, if you've been able to really improve the way that you perform physically, apply that same focus to school, apply that same focus to the office, and the same is true. So absolutely, you know, and what I'm really selling in my book is it's not about fitness. The fitness is the mechanism. The prize is the mindset. And that's the thing that's really going to transform your life.
So you talked about your career, military career finished sort of 10 years ago, but that's when the running kind of has almost taken off in as an entity on itself.
Yeah. So look, I mean, I was good. I mean, I was in my battalion. I was the fastest runner in the para battalion I was in. But there wasn't really opportunity for competition outside of that. And so when I went to Singapore, I joined banking, I didn't really like the sedentary life. And I needed something to kind of give me an avenue to kind of almost kind of, look, we're physical people, you know, physical creatures. We need to kind of push ourselves physically. And so running became that kind of mechanism to kind of release stress. And I did really well. I won the sort of Singapore category of the North Face race there, 100K. I then represented Singapore. And then since then, in between kind of babies arriving in our family, my wife's let me go off and do some races. And look, I it's rare. I only got one podium last year. It's rare I'm 1, 2, or 3, but I've not been outside of the top 10 with one exception in the last 2 years.
So there's a sort of a natural ability that you obviously have discovered, and then it just became fundamental to your sort of being and well-being, I guess, is what sort of happened with your running.
Yeah, Ben, I don't think it's a natural ability. I mean, right. I actually think what I've done is I've kind of taken weaknesses and turned them into strengths. Right. I mean, look, I've written a book. I failed my English literature GCSE. I didn't get anywhere near the athletics team at school, but, you know, actually I turned that weakness into a strength. I joined, you know, and so I think my message is to people that, you know, just because you're not good at something now, you invest in it, you turn that weakness into a strength, and that kind of framework is something that you can apply to anything.
And you've obviously, to go back to the army, you've trained countless recruits. What are the common qualities that kind of unite the high-performing soldiers and then the high-performing runners?
So, look, let me kind of go even bigger than that. I think high-performing individuals, high-performing teams are based around three things. I think it's optimism. I think it's grit, and I think it's a locus of control. And so, you know, optimism, you know, in order to do things which are difficult, that are intimidating, you need to have optimism that it's possible. And that's true in running. It's true in the workplace. I think it's true anywhere. Grit, you know, the route to getting something that's important to you is not going to be straight. It's not going to be linear. You're going to have to push through barriers, you're gonna have to push through trauma and bounce back stronger. And then the third thing, a locus of control. You know, you need to believe that you own your outcomes. If you think that the reason because you didn't win that race or you didn't do well in whatever it is, that exam, is because of some external factor, there's nothing you can do about it. And I think that the people that I saw that succeeded in paratrooper selection, the people that succeed in the organisation I work in now, are all people that have got those three traits: optimism, grit, and the locus of control.
So have you got a favourite distance now? Because ultras seem to feature heavily, but is that just by default, or is that sort of what you really wanted to challenge yourself with?
So look, but I'm by no means a world class runner. I am a kind of, you know, a decent club runner kind of standard, but I miss the wilderness. You know, I had a job where I was outdoors all the time. And so what ultramarathon running gives me is the ability to be out on my own for 2 or 3 hours. And I'm reasonably competitive at it. I find that, you know, I'm really good at half marathons. I'm really good at 10Ks. I find the marathon the most difficult distance because it's a kind of blend between being fast and long. Yeah. And you know, that's something I'll kind of go back to, I think. But at the moment, ultramarathon kind of feeds the need that I have. And I try and sort of intersperse that with half marathons when I can.
I think with January and marathon training beginning, everyone will want to know how, if you've got 4 children and you have a proper, like a big job, and you're writing a book, how have you fit ultramarathon training in?
The straight answer is I'm really focused on what's important to me. And then I'm really structured around making sure that all 168 hours I have a week are aligned to those things. And so that kind of manifests in, you know, having really hard edges to my days in the office, making sure that I don't fund my training time with sleep, because that's going to be counterproductive. And I don't fund it with time with my family, because, you know, ultimately that's the thing that, you know, that's my real legacy, you know, growing kids, you know, having kids that kind of thrive and are independent. And so what writing this book has helped me do is it's helped me codify it. You know, it's they say that the best way to learn something is to kind of teach it. And so all of the research that I've done and that's come into this book has really helped me refine my practice. And I mean, I think people often confuse activity with something that's going to sort of achieve an outcome. And so most of the things that actually propel me in running aren't actually running. So making sure I get 8 hours sleep every night, making sure that I eat well, that I'm hydrated, making sure that I restrict when I eat so that I'm kind of intermittent fasting, making sure that I've got full range of movement in my limbs. You know, those have been things which I neglected as a paratrooper, but I've invested in, you know, as a more mature athlete, which have actually meant that I'm not training as much, but those things have kind of propelled me far more than if I was kind of eating whatever I wanted, not sleeping, because, you know, it gives me the ability to kind of benefit from each training session, you know, the sort of stress recovery adaptation process. And so I think that's a big part of it. Well, and look, you know, your watch doesn't know the difference between an hour you spend on social media and an hour you spent pushing yourself around the track, but your body does. And so, you know, I have a really structured approach to goal setting. And as well as saying, right, this is the vision. So my goal, my big vision this year is to do UTMB in under 30 hours. That's the aspiration. But the other thing I do is I give myself some hygiene things. Right, what are the minimum standards that I'll hold myself to? So I will do 5 running sessions. I will always be able to do a 10K in under 38 minutes. I'll always be able to do 10 pull-ups. As soon as those things are not possible, I know that another area of my life is out of balance. And so I think it's being clear on what's the aspiration, but also being clear on what's the minimum standard that you're going to hold yourself to, whether that's in sleep or nutrition or, you know, or training as well.
Do you think you learned that kind of thing in the military? Because that seems to, from an outsider, that seems to be a very like structured way to live. Is that something that came in from that?
Do you know, I think actually it's something that the framework came from the military. But I mean, you know, 10 years ago, my life was being fit. I didn't need to think about things like that. It was part of my job. You know, now I'm really managing scarcity, you know, scarce time. How do I kind of squeeze the most out of every bit of it? And so, you know, I've taken the kind of the military approach to planning, which ultimately is how do you manage scarce resources against a one-off complex project? You know, albeit, you know, the opposition's, you know, not with you. But, you know, look, but you know, there's lots of things that can prevent you from achieving your fitness goals. You know, whether it's social media, whether it's, you know, an unsupportive spouse, whether it's an immersive job. And I find that being structured around what matters the most to me and then making sure that everything I do is aligned to that. People talk about values, and I think the best way to kind of to express someone's value is how they commit time to it. Someone says, my kids are really important to me, but they don't spend any time with them. Well, it's completely incongruent with the statement. And so, you know, I try and apply those things to the things that matter the most.
So are you on social media?
Do you know, I'm not, but I should be.
it sounds like they have time.
Yeah.
So look, social media, I think, is a great tool. But I think, you know, it's a bit like money. It's a great servant, but it's a terrible master. And so I try and use social media as something to help me. And I think, you know, so a good example, Strava. I have a virtual coach. My virtual coach is a guy called Vlad Iksal. He's like 25th in the world. He's incredibly accomplished ultra marathon, but he lives in Hong Kong and Australia. Now, I use Strava as the accountability mechanism. Yeah. He tells me what to do. I go and do it. And he tells me to either speed up, slow down, do more or do little. Yeah. And I just, it works really well for me. Mm. I do not engage Strava to like my friends' runs. That's not because they're not important to me. Yeah. But I recognise that that is when I'm being a servant to, you know, a slave to kind of Strava. Yeah. But when I kind of use it as something to kind of help me achieve the things I want to do, then you know, that's kind of how I engage LinkedIn, and it's kind of how I engage Facebook and other things like that.
No, it's interesting. I've cut all ties from social media at the start of the year, just as a sort of a nice time off period. And yeah, I think that you're right. I think that it's a time vacuum. Most importantly, I think that you can just spend far too much time looking at things which serve no purpose.
Well, and there's like this kind of looking at the smartest minds of our generation are competing for our time, and you know, and I look at it and I think, how many times do I come away from a social media experience feeling uplifted or better? And I think, you know, there's a great YouTube video from a guy who's been given like a month to live, and he writes called the Last Lecture. Yeah. And you know, we all have such limited time. And to be able to look at everything that you do and be able to reconcile whether or not it's something that is moving you forward or moving those people that you love the most forward is, I think, a really good framework. And I don't get that from most engagements with social media. And so I try and kind of pull from it rather than being sucked into it. But look, I'm more student than teacher.
So apart from the UTMB, what's 2020 hold for you?
I'm just at that time where I'm kind of working at all the things I want to do. So UTMB is obviously the pinnacle, and it's been a while in the making. I've got a 50K at the end of March in Singapore. I'm going to do a thing called the Dragonback Race, which is a thing in Wales. I'm going to do the Bob Graham again in early July, and I'll probably do a couple of other things. But I'm clear that UTMB is the prize, and I wouldn't do anything that would jeopardise that.
So, well, all the best for 2020 and all the running and the book, of course. And thanks so much for joining us.
Been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
It's 2020, and he's back in the studio with us for some half-running news, what should we call it?
Half ranting.
Oh, great. Ranting. Good. Kerry McCarthy.
We love a Kerry.
Hello. Happy 2020, everybody. I hope everyone is rested and ready to hit the roads and trails this year. I'm going to kick off the new year with some environmental news, which is always good. It is specific to people in London, but if you don't live in London, there is a kind of a wider purpose to this. So keep listening. It concerns the drinks brand Tenzing, which you may have come across in supermarkets over the last year or so. Last summer they partnered with King's College London to launch a clean air tracker.
Yes.
Now, if you live in London, or indeed if you've just visited it for the day, you will be aware that the air quality here ain't great. In fact, apparently it exceeded the European and UK air quality limit values for the whole year on 18th of March last year, just 77 days into 2019.
Good stuff.
So apparently we have similar toxic air pollution levels to Beijing and New Delhi. Which is
famous for their air.
Yeah, famous for their air. Anyway, they launched this tracker in conjunction with Strava. It's mobile only. You basically sync from Strava if you use it, and it will tell you after your run the air quality of where you've just been.
Oh, nice.
Subsequent to that, they've actually added on a load of cleaner runs that you can do now. So as well as potentially sort of tweaking your route based on feedback, you can go and choose routes which are less polluted for you. And which is new now, they've started their Clean Air Run Club, which is obviously very, very London-centric. It goes every Thursday night from near Southwark Station, basically, near South Bank. And they will take you on a 7 to 10K run route, which is kind of the least polluted at the time, because obviously the pollution levels are kind of shifting day by day, which I think is great. I mean, I think this is something that, if possible, should kind of be rolled out in other cities and urban conurbations.
100%. I feel almost at a government level. I think if this is a sort of benchmark of what can be achieved, then the councils of Greater Manchester and everywhere else should probably think, oh, this would be a lovely way to serve our citizens.
Yeah. I mean, I think if there were data available where you could precisely say this many deaths a year are directly contributable to air pollution. Now, I did read a figure somewhere about 40,000 deaths a year, but I mean, I'm a bit dubious about that, because how do you work out that those 40,000 people, you know, what happens if some of them were smokers as well?
Yeah.
How do you work out exactly what it is that killed them? Or they just had like really poor immune systems?
Yeah.
But I think, you know,
happy
I 2020. Think it's great.
Happy 2020. Yeah. No, I think that's a really great thing.
You can see a time in the future, you know, when we do these future casting things in the future, when you can see a time in the future where people will be like, plotting it in on their holographic device, just saying, take me on the cleanest route. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Secondly, and this does involve Strava again, and I think we might have to come up with a second jingle for me, because this isn't news-based. It's more of a kind of a ranty hot take. So maybe we need a Kerry's hot take jingle.
Got it.
As well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, the older I get, the more I can see this happening.
Cantankerous. Cantankerous Kerry.
Done. Was nobody recording that?
Tick.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm curious to see what you guys and the listeners think of this. But I mean, you know, there was a time when Christmas used to be a time for joy, peace, family, overconsumption of beige food, all that kind of thing. Now I think we can add a new tradition to the list, which is humble bragging by runners.
Yes.
Yes.
You get to Christmas week now, and everyone, mostly powered by Strava stats, I think, is just wanging on about how many miles they've run in that calendar year. And I just don't get it. You'll see, you know, somebody will repost a graphic which says something like 1,846 miles, and then there'll be a comment underneath which, you know, along the lines of, I was aiming for 2,500, but an ACL tear, adrenal fatigue after doing the marathon de Sable on my hands, you know, keeping a mistress as well as a wife and project managing the builders in our six-bedroom countryside love nest, meant I didn't quite manage it, but I'm happy with that. Onwards. And you're just like, what?
I've got two takes on this, which is that, first of all, it's unrepresentative to what that person's been aiming to do for the year. Now, if someone's got massive mileage because they've done three ultras throughout the year, talk about the three ultras. They're the successes. By default, you're going to have a big running year. So, like, just putting it out there, like, oh, I did 3,000 miles this year. It's like, oh, all right, well, cool, but the other things you did were better. So talk about those more, and then the other thing. But then the other side of that is that some people, and just what Sam was talking about being slave to it rather than master, is that people are simply running as far as they can for that end of year total.
Yeah, but I'm guilty of that. I wanted it to be on an enumeral of five.
That's just
mad.
Those of us who know you, Jane, won't
fully,
be the remotest bit surprised
fully
by that
insane.
Revelation.
I was like, I've got to go and do another 1.3.
But I don't think that's not your grand total. That's you just being...
No, that was me to get 1.355. Because I was on like 1.331. And I was like, nope, can't take a mile
well,
off.
The figure has to end in a five.
It has to end in a five
yeah,
or a zero.
No, no, but this is... because
other people must agree. It's like when you put the radio on and it's like 14. You're like, no.
Oh my god, we've opened up Pandora's box now. This is
it's got to be a five or a zero.
Got out.
It can't be like 1.001.
So I think
lunatic.
Nice looking arbitrary numbers are very important.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, that's
someone's
that's
got my back.
Yeah, yeah. But I think
he's just saying that because he's sitting next to you and he's a bit scared.
Yeah,
<right now.
laughs> because everyone on the podcast is going to be like, why did you employ her?
But I think that what you, but and also you did two marathons last year.
Yes.
So there you go, your mileage.
But I wasn't like, oh wow, I'm really proud of that number. I just wanted it to be a new
number.
No,
I think
five.
That's different. Lots of people would be very, very just showing off about a big long number.
Right. But that's the thing, isn't it? Like say, with regards to what Sam said, people doing it to get the mileage. You know, as much as we're joking around, it kind of, the serious point is that we know it can lead to injury,
illness. Yeah, you can get obsessed.
There's addiction. Kind of things. I mean, it's a social media addiction.
It is addiction.
Yeah, and I was really annoyed that my brother had run more than me and he's been injured. Shout out to Tom. 1,500. I was like, how?
Wow.
But then I was like, I can't run 200 miles in like a week.
I understand
the competitiveness of it.
Yeah, so I am this person that you hate. I didn't put it on my Instagram, but...
Well, scant consolation, frankly.
I
think if you start off
it.
At the beginning of the year and go, hey, this is my charity challenge for the year, or I'm doing it in remembrance of somebody, and you state it and you go, that's my goal. But like you say, people accumulate these miles in the course of doing things. And maybe they've had a heavy first half of the year and they look at their stats and they go, ooh, maybe I could get to this mileage. And then, of course, they start adding in junk miles. And I think, you know, social media being what it is and everyone influencing everyone else, people putting their figures out there and causing, you know, jealousy or resentment or competitiveness. You know, maybe this is me being a bit of a kind of a running Grinch, but I just don't get it and think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, I think people can take ownership and be proud of everything that they've done running-wise, and I think that might be a great big end-of-year total, and I think that that's probably where a lot of it comes from. But I think, as you alluded, the comment that goes with it, or perhaps the personality associated with it, is where the negativity comes from it, possibly.
Yes, I mean, I will agree with that. I've seen very few comments of people who go, gosh, my targets this year were to do this, that and the other race. And I've just discovered that in the process I clocked this mileage. You don't see that.
I mean, I did 300 miles this year. I haven't run anything since June, I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, I'll show everyone if they want to see.
Did you finish on 300 or 301?
Well, maybe.
Because that's where I would get upset.
Anyway, I'm curious to know what you guys out there think. So let us know what you think. You can email podcast@runnerswell.co.uk with your thoughts.
Great. Kerry,
someone back me up.
Kerry, thank you for your news slash rant.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thank you to our guest, Major Sam McGrath, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho and is available on Acast, iTunes and all your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review and we will see you again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.